Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, this is Kitty Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know, and I'm coming to you live, actually, not from deep inside your large intestine. I'm actually sharing a show today from Stephanie Center, and a lot of you know who she is because I've had her on my show in the past, and she is fantastic. She's got her master's degree in occupational therapy. She's an incredible researcher, and she has her own podcast called Revolutionary Health with Stephanie Center. And she asked me to come on her show because she works with women and their hormones, and she wanted to dig deeper into therapeutic uses of bioidentical progesterone. And I enjoyed this interview so much, and I felt like because she was so organized with her questioning and the way that she managed the interview, I was very impressed. The interview ended up being really, really good because, as many of you know, I can go off into the weeds with the way that I speak, and she really kind of reined me in. She wrangled me in and was able to really capture a wonderful interview in regards to the therapeutic uses of bioidentical progesterone. And of course, you know that is what I'm all about these days. And so I thought it would be super useful for so many of you to hear this. So I'm sharing her show. And by the way, you should definitely subscribe and download to her Revolutionary Health podcast because it's really good. I've learned a lot from her show. So you definitely want to check her out. I think you'll really enjoy her show and follow her on Instagram and all the things. Everything is in the show notes. Enjoy.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to Revolutionary Health Podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Center. Joining with me today, I have Kitty Martone, who I'm so excited to talk with on the topic of progesterone. And I just want to make a quick note that I do have a little one with me today. So if you hear any cute noises, I can't take credit for those. They are from Miss Charlotte. but today, so Kitty has an interesting story, and I'd love for her to share a little bit about it, how she got into studying progesterone. But she is like a progesterone wizard. She knows anything and everything there is to know about progesterone, how it interacts in the body with certain things, certain conditions that affect your ability to absorb progesterone, which I think is really fascinating. I'll let you take over the mic, Kitty. And if you just want to tell us a few things about yourself and how you got into this work, then I have some really important questions about progesterone.
Okay, cool. Well, all right. So I'll cut to the chase, really, and just say that, you know, I struggled with my health since I was born. And by the time I got to reproductive age, all of the things I had struggled with, leaky gut and allergies and everything, had been compounded by puberty, by hormonal changes, and worsened. And so by the time I was into my working years, I was able to work, I was so riddled with autoimmune and infertility and debilitating cramps. Well, I didn't know I was infertile yet, but I was just debilitated with cramps and bleeding and clotting, and I was on the birth control pill. I was off the pill, on the pill, off the pill, because it would help me in some ways and not in other ways. Until finally, it was just a big spider's nest of issues, of symptoms and medications and other medications to quell these symptoms and whatnot. And so I discovered, you know, I don't even want to call it alternative health anymore. I think it's just taking responsibility of your own healthcare, you know, because sometimes that can mean medicating yourself. Sometimes that can mean, you know, seeking out another functional medical doctor who does use medication. So it's not really just about doing things rogue and coffee enemas and stinging nettles, herbs and stuff. It's about just taking your health into your own hands. Taking responsibility and saying, hey, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Yes, this doctor says I have migraines and I should take this medication, but why am I getting the migraines? And then go deeper and deeper and deeper. And that when that happened, I met my husband, who's a chiropractor, who's very alternative and very holistic. And that's when I discovered, you know, everything from Reiki to alphabiotic lift to, again, coffee enemas and all kinds of enemas, colonics. I discovered such a world of healthcare, self-care. And then I started studying it myself. I started studying gut health because we were working with children who had autism and I wanted to help them. And I knew that was a common denominator with them. Turns out it's the common denominator with everybody is gut health. And so I ended up meeting a very famous author, Donna Gates, and working with her. She wrote The Body Ecology Diet. And then I started realizing in the midst of, I was getting so healthy, my gut health problems were going, I was managing things without medication anymore, thriving almost, but I couldn't carry a baby. I could not stay pregnant. I was miscarrying. I was a geriatric pregnancy, as they say. I was already in my late 30s by the time we were really giving it a go. And I would get pregnant, and then 5-6 weeks in, I would miscarry. Mm-hmm. And so I went to so many doctors and never even heard the word progesterone, let alone progestin. Like, no one ever mentioned progesterone, which just to this, and this is Beverly Hills. So these are doctors I've been referred to. I didn't have insurance, so I was paying out of pocket to see these very, very recommended and highly sought after doctors. None of them had said progesterone. They said, well, prior to my first miscarriage, they said, you've never miscarried. So we don't think there's an issue with that. What we're going to look at is the health of your eggs. We're going to count your eggs. We're going to do all of these ultrasounds and squirt dye up into your fallopian tubes and all of these things, right? And to no avail. So finally, I guess I was already in my early 40s, and I had this, I had a severe anemia. I was bleeding out. I was bleeding out for my periods would last, you know, 20 days. And severe bleeding, severe anemia. I was having to get scans on my heart because they were concerned about the health of my heart. They wanted to do iron infusions and wanted me to take iron. But every time I did that, I would get violently ill. And so I couldn't do the iron. And now, of course, you and I, knowing Morley and all the other intricacies behind iron, it's not about taking iron at all, ever. So I ended up, that's another rabbit hole, right?
Sure.
So then I ended up stumbling. I was working at the time for Dr. Robert Marshall, who is a quite famous pioneer in the field of nutraceuticals. Mm-hmm. He started Premier Research Labs. And I was working with him and shadowing under his tutelage. And he was saying things to me about progesterone. And he was saying things to me about liver stagnation and estrogen dominance. And it was the first, and Dr. Ray Peet. He was saying these things, and I had never heard these words and names before. And so I ended up using a progesterone cream at the time called NatPro that's still available. There's a website called progesteronetherapy.com, still there. Sadly, the woman who ran it, she's no longer with us. She was kind of like Morley and Georgie Dinkoff, just like these intense researchers who are passionate, and you, who are passionate about just diving deep into the research. And so I would just read through that site and discovered some amazing information about the differences, first of all, between progesterone and progestins. So that was it. I started my journey, and unfortunately, by the time I really understood progesterone, I was well into, you know, perimenopause. And so I never really had the chance to conceive. So that happened. And, you know, I didn't have children, sadly. But what a wealth of knowledge, and what it brought me to was being able to help literally hundreds of women so thus far getting pregnant. And most importantly, not suffering from what I suffered through between endometriosis, fibroids, polyps, preventing that in their young daughters, you know, preventing migraines and catamenial epilepsy and things like this that they were suffering from. So it really was a bittersweet pill, right, to swallow. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, I can't have children, But this knowledge, this uncharted territory, really, because it's the Wild West at this point. I think in 20 years, it's going to be a very different landscape progesterone. But currently, it is the Wild West. So when you say I'm an expert at progesterone, I say I'm obsessed and passionate about it. And I do know a lot. But, you know, there are so many people out there who are experts. And even those experts disagree with each other. So it's a complicated subject. But I think I've managed to take a big bite out of it and found some, you know, paved ways through this that women can definitely try it safely and possibly get beyond what they're dealing with as far as hormone imbalance goes.
Oh, what a beautiful story. And I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit, honestly. I really look up to you as a progesterone expert. I think the people that are obsessed end up coming out and being the most knowledgeable because they can't put it down. They can't walk away from it. And so, goodness, you mentioned so many things in your story that I really want to circle back to, but I want to start with, for the listener. So a lot of my listeners are of childbearing age, trying to conceive, or they're young mamas who we know that hormones completely change after pregnancy and you have to recover from that. And so for the listener, I feel like progesterone doesn't get its moment in the sun. You know, I feel like out of the sex hormones, it's the one that's kind of like the redheaded stepchild. I feel like everybody is obsessed with estrogen dominance and low testosterone. Like those are the two things that I hear about the most, and people don't almost seem to not be interested in progesterone. And it's like, well, wait a second. This is a star player here. This is a Michael Jordan on the team. You got to pay attention to the progesterone. Well, I'm showing my age by saying Michael Jordan, huh? anyways, so can you give us just like an explanation of like why we should care about progesterone, like what kind of a hormone it is, what it does, how it interacts with other hormones, like what is progesterone's like main role in the body?
Wow, that's a good question and a big question. Well, what's cool about the science and the research now is that they're discovering some pretty magical things about it that they didn't just even know 10 years ago. Like it's looking like progesterone. So prior to all that, progesterone was known as the pregnancy hormone. It was known as the hormone that you produce the most of when pregnant, which is incorrect. And it was known as a female sex hormone, which is incorrect. So it's in just a brief summary, the, you know, steroidal pathways, I always say it's like the overview of the New York subway, right? It just like look like all these different routes and ways that hormones travel. And it's like also like a ladder. So two analogies there, with the ladder being that the hormones cascade, they start from the top with the raw materials to make all hormones. And that would be pregnenolone, which is the mother of all hormones. And DHEA is next, and then progesterone. So very high up. And they start to cascade down and trickle down into different ways based on all kinds of things. They're signaling molecules that send signals throughout the body regarding how you feel about something, regarding sexual activity, regarding pregnancy, regarding testosterone, gonadal health and prostate health. And there's so much that the hormones do and that the endocrine system does. So that's like probably, you know, people study that particular subject their entire lives, and it's still very complex. Mm-hmm. So don't feel, I'd like to say that to your listeners who, like you were saying, Nancy in Missouri, all of you guys out there who have lives, have, you know, active lives, this is confusing. So don't get discouraged. Like it is complex, and it's supposed to be designed that way for some reason. So don't feel overwhelmed if you can't understand this. It's not because you're dumb. It's not because it's, you know, beyond you. It's just complex, and that's the way it is. So I'll keep things as simple as possible because that's how I like to see them and understand them. And progesterone plays a big role in creating, it donates, they say, to make other hormones like cortisol, estrogen, testosterone. So it's very, very important. But they're also saying now the new sort of research is showing that it looks like it can like it's like a chameleon. It can like shift to do other things in the body. It's we have receptors for progesterone throughout our entire body, in our brains, everywhere. And so it's we know that it's anti-inflammatory. So it brings down inflammation. We know that it can be catabolic mostly, which means it catabolizes or it breaks things down. And that's important when you think about having fibroids or polyps and you think about the breakdown of tissue and how to prevent that and why progesterone is really, really important in that action, in that process. So we look at estrogen. Estrogen is mitogenic. It causes cells to divide and grow like a fetus, like a tumor, like a polyp, like a fibroid, like a cyst, where like endometrial lining, like endometrial tissue. So that's what estrogen can do. And progesterone is there to oppose that, to keep that from, it regulates it. It regulates estrogen. I like to say progesterone is the lion tamer and estrogen is the lion. So if we don't have that lion tamer to keep estrogen in check, estrogen is vital. It's precious. It's a beautiful hormone, but it can be a lion. It can be a potentially dangerous hormone if it's not regulated by progesterone. So that's another important function of progesterone. And so the problem is because progesterone is in such demand in the body to help make other hormones, to help with inflammation, to do all these other things, it is very much in demand and can be very deficient in a lot of us. It can be something, you mentioned after pregnancy, how hormones go haywire and people are like, why is that? If we're meant to be making babies, why do our hormones go haywire? And the reason is because, when you make a baby, you grow a human, it costs you so much in nutrition. It costs you a tremendous amount on a daily basis to grow a baby and to then feed the baby and then to also keep you thriving so you can have more babies. That's how we're designed. But if we are depleted in our fuel and our resources that are required to do those things, well, then our hormones, once you pass that child and you've got all this hormone release, everything gets sent upside down because we have all this depletion. Now, not everybody, some women thrive, but these days women are so depleted that after that first baby, and even after an abortion, after a miscarriage, after ectopic pregnancies, all of these things can send the body into such a tumultuous time of hormone imbalance. After my first miscarriage, I had catamenial epilepsy. I had all my hormones went, everything I had was amplified, was like times 10 after that. And it just got worse and worse and worse because I was depleted in B6 and magnesium and all the things that help you make progesterone ultimately. Yeah. So that's its importance. There's a lot I'm leaving out, but you get the picture in terms of, and we pass our hormone load to our babies. So a baby can be born estrogen dominant. A baby can be born progesterone deficient. And that's unfortunate, but it's just the way it goes, you know. Estrogen dominance in a baby can look like cradle cap, colic, baby menses, baby lactation, things that people are like, what? You know, you see these things in little babies, and this can be attributed to low progesterone, high estrogen. So that's how important progesterone is.
Yeah. So something that you mentioned that I didn't know is that progesterone is catabolic.
It can be both. It can be both. Yes. That's why we're saying a chameleon, right?
Oh, so, my goodness. Okay. So that answers my question then, because I was like, because I know cortisol is also catabolic. So that makes sense to me that catabolic can donate to catabolic.
Yeah, it's quite the chameleon. And you think about how can progesterone protect us from fibroids, or how, for example, I had a cyst that would never go away on my right ovary. And I would go get it removed, go back, it would be gone, of course. Then I would go back in 6 weeks or whatever, and it would be back. And then I started progesterone, and I had the fortunate experience of having an ultrasound after I started mega dosing progesterone and seeing that the cyst had shrunk dramatically after starting progesterone within a week of doing the ultrasound. How does that work if it isn't helping to reduce inflammation and catabolize tissue and break down things, right? How is that possible unless it has that action? And so a lot of doctors are like, that's a misdiagnosis. That's not possible. Well, it has to be possible because it's happening, right? And then there's now also research to show that. Just it makes me think about breast cancer. There's a study that shows that these scientists were saying it's looking like the reason that some tumors that are estrogen receptor positive and progesterone receptor positive. And they say, wow, that's dangerous. Don't take progesterone. Well, they're starting, and that's out of breast cancer, out of the types of breast cancer you can have, that's the most favorable, right? The one that is probably the safest and the, I don't know, easiest to treat is the tumors that have both receptors on them. And this study talks about why that could be. And they're saying, well, we theorize here that perhaps the receptor is on the tumor, that the progesterone receptor is on there, and the progesterone is trying to break down the tumor, where the estrogen is mitogenic and causing it to divide and grow, that the progesterone perhaps is there to oppose that. So I'll send you that study. So yeah,
So
magical.
interesting. I just learned so much from you about this hormone. So for the listener who is going, okay, I think I have symptoms of estrogen dominance. And I know you run the estrogen dominance Facebook group that has like a gajillion people in it. So for that person that's listening that goes that, because I think estrogen dominance is a pretty popular buzzword now. Like I think that that's in our common vernacular. Like,
For
oh
sure.
yeah, it's BPA. People talk about bisphenol A and estrogen dominance. That's the con Nancy in Missouri knows about all that. So she's listening and she's going, okay, I think I have low progesterone. What do I do? Because I know one thing that you taught me, I'll call it my progesterone masterclass, because we met back in August and you taught me like, so I had to take like a long walk after that meeting because I just needed to digest everything you said. But you talked about how supplementing with progesterone, with bioidentical progesterone, and you talked about the different methods. There are multiple methods, but how that can, like you got to stick with it for a little bit because if you're taking it, it can maybe exacerbate some symptoms at first. And so for the listener who's thinking, oh, I'm just going to hop on and try progesterone because I think I'm estrogen dominant. Like what would be your caution maybe to that? And what would you recommend doing? And again, this is not medical advice. This is like girlfriend to girlfriend, watch yourself, think about some things before you go making decisions.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Well, let's start by saying that estrogen dominance doesn't mean you have too much estrogen. It can be that. It just means that your estrogen to progesterone ratio is off. Your estrogen is dominating your progesterone when it shouldn't be, because sometimes in your cycle it's meant to, and that's a good thing. But it's when it's dominating and it should not be. Even what at the time in the cycle when hormones are at their lowest level, but your estrogen is dominating. So some women will say, I'm not estrogen dominant because my symptoms come up after my period. Or they'll say, my symptoms come up here, and that's why it's not estrogen. But it could very well be estrogen because it could be at the lowest point of hormone production
but estrogen is like, dominating your progesterone. Because again, I use the lion tamer analogy, but I also use the tango, because the tango, if you've ever watched or you know anything about ballroom dancing and the tango, you know, the partners, like, they're constantly trading energy and they're constantly, one is leading the other. It's like a picture in a frame. Neither is less important than the other. It's like constantly you're either looking at the beautiful picture or you're looking at the gorgeous frame. You're looking at the man who's holding the woman up strongly and guiding her around, or you're looking at the elegant woman who's flashing and looking so beautiful. Progesterone is estrogen. It's doing its flamboyant thing and giving us full lips and sexy hips and full breasts. And progesterone's like, calm down there. Not too big, not too much, not too full, not too, right? It's keeping it in this beautiful dance all the time, all the time. So while progesterone is needed back in the back end, doing, you know, contributing to cortisol or doing this or doing that, it's also needed up front with this estrogen dance, estrogen tango. And so that's why that concept of estrogen dominance, women are like, no, couldn't be me. I have tiny boobs. I need estrogen. Well, that might be so, but you could also be dominant because your progesterone is low.
Yeah.
So that's important. And then in regards to medical advice, I don't want to be the person who feels responsible for someone getting on progesterone and then getting worse. I don't want to be that person. You know, I want everyone to have a medical physician, doctor who is highly, highly knowledgeable about this stuff. But guess what? Good luck finding one. You know, I just met someone, Dr. Rosensweet, who I had on my show yesterday. And he was someone who spends time with people who I'm sure he's expensive, but he takes a lot of time, because dosing progesterone is extremely, it's a challenge. You don't, it's usually pretty easy with young women, but the older we get and the closer we get into our late 30s and over, you know, you need somebody to really be able to understand this stuff. But even he and I disagreed on a bunch of things that I had read and that I have seen and studied and researched. He's a huge fan of taking of estrogen. And I'm like, ah. So I do think you should try to find, first and foremost, a medical physician who is well-versed in this. It might take you a lot. It's probably going to be a telemed for Nancy in Missouri, because they're probably going to be in, you know, the coastal cities like LA and San Francisco and Houston and those places where those doctors are, but it's doable.
Yeah.
So that, yes, do see a doctor, check it out first, take some tests, find out, take blood tests, take urine tests, take all the tests that your insurance will afford you, or pay out of pocket for something like the Dutch. And that can tell you a lot. So that is probably, and I know I went off the rails here a little bit, but I think it's important. It is the biggest challenge that us women have. And that is that there are not enough doctors who have gone off into the weeds for us to understand this in depth and to read the current research and the old research and marry it together and figure out. And each woman has her own variables. So, you know, the fact that I haven't had children is going to make me have a very different outcome using progesterone than a 53-year-old woman who has had children. It's so individual. Your stress level, if you're an A-type personality versus not, like, all those things go into play. And so, yes, please try to find a doctor first. But if you can't, which is where I ended up, in fact, I was steered very wrong in very bad directions. And I frankly kind of think that I probably would have, you know, ended up with some children had I found a doctor who did care more and did want to study and understand what I was presenting to them. Look, I found this study. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? You know? So, and there are more doctors now that are into it. So that's good news. So I'm estrogen dominant. Now what? I would say that, you know, if you can afford to take the test on your own, like a Dutch or a blood spot, on my website, and I know probably you offered the same, there are options for you to discover that. And then understanding the difference between progesterone and progestin, because you can go to your doctor and say, look, I found out I'm estrogen dominant, check this out. And they're going to say, great, let's put you on this progesterone pill or, you know, patch. And you go, oh, great, they do progesterone here. Fantastic. And then you get on it and you get home and you realize that it's, you know, a progestin. And so knowing the difference between those two is crucial. Progestin is synthetic. Yeah. It is, I mean, bioidentical progesterone is synthesized in a lab from plants. And progesterone, it's bioidentical to the progesterone our own bodies make. Progestin is synthesized in a lab, probably from plants at some point back, you know, but ultimately it is one molecule, I believe, different from what our bodies make. And that difference is all the difference in the world between, you know, medicated birth control, basically, is what you're taking, or as they're saying now, medicated menopause, when you're on birth control. And they can't say that though, can they? Because that's too scary. But if you told a 26-year-old girl who's going on birth control, okay, this birth control puts you into medicated menopause, how would that alter her perspective? You know,
well, the marketing in that is amazing, right? To call it birth control, like you have control over, you know, just the wording is very, it's empowering, right? You can control your births with this pill. And I can't tell you the number of women that have come to me and said, oh, my doctor put me on a progesterone only birth control. So I'm taking the real deal and it's great. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
My heart breaks because they think they're on something that they're not.
Yeah. I have never put that together. Birth control. It's empowering you to be control over birthing. I never thought about that. It's so obvious and in your face, but I never thought about
it that way. Well, I started paying attention to marketing with the whole vitamin D thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like we're going to call it a vitamin because people know that vitamins are good for you.
Right. Right.
It's when it's not a vitamin.
Right. Because the second you say hormone D, people go, I don't want to mess with my hormones.
Yep. Whoa. Right? Wait, what?
Yeah.
So the marketing there is great.
Yeah. Let's talk about, this is all part in the same a question you asked me. Let's talk about that. The idea that it's, you're gonna have to edit that. I just spaced out. So you said, oh, the hormone D is like, what about when I say to someone, have you thought about progesterone? I get this all week. Somebody new says, that I was sent to you because I know that you know, help people, you guide people to use progesterone, but I don't want to mess with my hormones. And that is like the thing you hear all the time, but it's like, what do you think taking magnesium is doing? It's messing with your hormones. It's messing with everything because magnesium has more functions in the body than progesterone does, right? It's like every time we take a vitamin or a supplement or a mineral, particularly minerals, right? Like when people say I'm on iodine, I'm on iron, you know, I mean, talk about messing with your hormones or messing with your metabolic body, you know, like, so it's funny how they have certainly tricked us into thinking, no, unless someone's a doctor, do not even talk about your hormones. Don't even say the word hormones unless you're talking to a doctor. It's too dangerous. Yeah. Right. And I think it got that sort of stigma, rightly so, because of birth control, you know, because back when Premarin came along, you know, and
I'm glad you went there. I was Yep.
I mean, yeah. So it's scary. These doctors are afraid that if they give you something and you get birth control and you get breast cancer or any kind of reproductive cancer or hormonal cancer, that they're going to be sued. And that's pretty, and the state of California has a warning on, we have to put a warning on Ona's bottles, and probably every substance in California has a cancer warning on it. They're basically saying the state of California sees progesterone as potentially being the cause, could cause cancer. And that's just so wrong because they're referring to progestins, but they don't discern between the two in California.
Apparently. I wrote that note down that California does not delineate between synthetic forms and bioidentical forms of progesterone. So that
Yeah.
they do that, they have that warning label, which is, I think that not to go like totally off subject, but I think that that warning label, people don't even pay attention to it anymore because it's on everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, it's on the coffee maker. It's not like it's on my couch. It's on everything, that
yeah.
You know, Proposition 65 sort of deal. So it's like, okay, well, we just have to ignore this because nothing is good enough for California. Like
yeah.
We're just.
Well, isn't it interesting that that warning isn't on estrogen?
Oh, really?
No, it's not. It's not required to be, from my understanding. I mean, you could go to Walgreens or Rite Aid or whatever, CVS, and you can buy an estrogen product, and it does not say that on the bottle.
Interesting.
So that's, I mean, I
Ooh,
might
they're
be wrong,
lobbyists.
But yeah, well, we know, right? The same lobbyists that, well, they're the pharma industry, which are selling, I mean, they make way more money on Marina coils and, you know, the mini pill and all of these different birth control medications than they do on bioidentical progesterone.
Well, they can't,
so.
isn't, and correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it that they can't patent something that's naturally occurring? So that's why pharmaceuticals do synthetic, is because they can't patent it and make money off of it the same way as they can if they change it a little bit.
Yeah, because they're not going to give you a bioidentical progesterone pill from a pharmacy. They're going to send you to a compounding pharmacy to get bioidentical progesterone creams or Trochids or you know, sublinguals or whatever. So suppositories, those are all going to be from a compounding pharmacy, which right now the FDA is really putting the pressure on to stop the production of bioidentical hormones through compounding pharmacies. So so there's a some kind of effort against it. And it's strange because I don't want to talk about why that could be and the nefarious possibilities behind that. But what we do know is it's much safer. It's much, much safer than estrogen. So why is it even a war? I mean, it'd be one thing to say, we recommend you see your physician to get guidance on taking this. Why not? You do that. It's on other over the counter, you know, even on supplements where it says we recommend 2 per day or see your physician or, you know, whatever your physician is recommending. So, so we went off track just a little bit there.
Well, okay. So back to you've mentioned the Dutch a few times. So that's a dried urine test of comprehensive hormones. It's a urine test that looks at your sex and stress hormones and their metabolites. And I kind of see people in one of two camps here. I see people they're not making any progesterone. And then I see other people with symptoms of estrogen dominance who are making a lot of progesterone. And I really like what you said, that, you know, it's all relative. Like you could be making hardly any estrogen, but if estrogen is still the one you're making the most of out of your hormones, you are estrogen dominant. That is the most dominant sex hormone. And so I recommend progesterone to a lot of women who they're on a healthy level in that dial of progesterone. They're making, you know, I'll put in air quotes here, within functional limits or within normal limits is what the medical language would say. Right. And I find that they really benefit from that progesterone. So, and I don't have the experience. I know you run the estrogen dominance group, and that's a very specific group of people who maybe have more complicated cases. I've not ever had somebody have a negative reaction to progesterone, but where I kind of struggle with is with dosing and kind of, I do like to monitor. I know you like to monitor people as well who are on it to see, okay, well, you know, here's where we're at. Here's what we need to do next. Because the needs fluctuate with using progesterone. The method can fluctuate. And I think it's really interesting. You've talked before about how people with certain conditions can absorb progesterone differently, older versus younger. Do you mind kind of touching on that? Because I know, like on your, with your company, Ona, you have different types of progesterone, and for good reason, and different strengths. So I think that's really interesting. And I think the listener who's maybe looking at like, where do I start? Be kind of cool to hear what the options are out there. And then I also wanted to give credit to Ray Peet for his work in making this possible.
Yeah. So good. Let's see. I'll start with Ray Peet. So Ray Peet is, you know, like I said, I knew about him for a while because my mentor was a big fan, and he would always quote him and talk about his research and the studies that he would uncover and whatnot. And then I really was kind of on the edge of that. I hadn't gone deep into the Ray Peet world. And then just after having the estrogen dominance support group on Facebook, that's what it's called, the estrogen dominance support group, because now I think there's an estrogen dominance group as well. Mm-hmm. Estrogen dominance support group.
Okay.
You know, I'm always, as you are, looking for why things aren't working for some people. You know, like you said, you haven't really seen anybody have a bad reaction to progesterone. But what I have seen, and I think it's because of who I am and who I attract, and the estrogen dominant support group seems to be a lot of those same women. Mm-hmm. And I think the variables behind why some women absorb differently has to do with other underlying issues in the body. And that are being overlooked. So I mentioned this doctor I had on that I disagreed with, but that was really good at what he does. He doesn't see women in his office go over 150 milligrams ever, and that everyone does mm-hmm. really well. And I was like, okay, well, then I said, well, I was on 800 milligrams for over a year, and then came down, had a complete relief of symptoms, had, you know, I passed polyps. I mean, I had like a cathartic experience during that 800 milligrams. And he said, well, I'm not going to tell you that that's dangerous because I don't think it is dangerous. He said, what I do think is you might have been wasting your money because you were overlooking other things that we could have brought balance to and you wouldn't have needed so much. And I agree with that because what I'm learning now, and this goes back to the Ray Peet thing where he talks about, you know, liver issues, liver stagnation. I don't know if he uses that word, liver stagnation. He talks about gut health and endotoxin, things that keep us from eliminating toxic estrogen, right? And that's why
She's dreaming.
There she
Sorry,
is.
She just started okay. doing that in her sleep.
No worries.
She's asleep. Well, Beth will edit that little burst out.
So basically it's like these overlooked symptoms, these overlooked issues. So the gut health is super important, liver function is super important. And if you aren't eliminating, and that's what the Dutch is so good for. And, you know, what I find funny, just side note, is a lot of these experts will say like, oh, the Dutch is just not good because of A, B, and C. And this other person will say, I'm not a fan of 24-hour urine because of this reason. Or I'm not, you know, blood only shows what's in circulation. And I'm like, what? Don't bash the tests, like put them all together in a cohesive puzzle. You know, we're trying to put together a puzzle here. Because the Dutch is so incredibly valuable when it comes to what you said, which is the metabolites and what we're doing, not just our hormone levels, but what you're doing with your hormones and your spent hormones, which is crucial. You know, a really good Dutch practitioner can look at your Dutch test and without seeing thyroid levels, because it doesn't show you your thyroid numbers, you can tell if that person's hypothyroid. You can tell if that person has a stagnant liver. You can tell if that person has SIBO even. You can even tell if they've got leaky gut. It is, if you've got a good practitioner, that test I think is worth its weight in gold times 10, you know? It's like, yeah. And so because this Dr. Rosenseat was like, the Dutch this and the Dutch that, I was like, hey man, like try it. Add it to your picture of someone's puzzle and you're going to learn a lot. So anyway, so that going back to what he said about me, that something's overlooked. So a lot of women can have hypothyroid And that can mean that they've got a drier skin, or they have difficulty with absorption at the skin, even like they'll put lotion on and still feel constantly dry, yet their hands are moist or clammy. And that kind of, even if your thyroid labs look normal, if you aren't testing your pulse and your temperature, your basal in the morning, resting temperature and pulse, and then 40 minutes after you eat your largest meal for like a week or even 2 weeks, to see if it's out of range, and I'll say what those ranges are quickly, you can actually see what, if there's subtle sluggishness at the thyroid.
Oh, interesting. And
yeah. And so just since I said that, I'll give this to everyone. So this is basically testing your thyroid at home every morning, right when you wake up, with a thermometer for a week or so, when you wake and then 40 minutes after lunch. Pulse and temp, the pulse should be between 75 and 80, and the temp should be between 97.9 and 99. Now, it can be under those values, or it can be under or over. And under is showing you some sluggishness. You're having a slow metabolic rate. Over it can tell us that you are in adrenal overload. You're utilizing cortisol and adrenaline, all those hormones that make you hyper. You wake up in the morning and your heart's pounding, or, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't go back to sleep. Those are going to show up in a, you know, 1 or 2 week look at your pulse. And it's just a reading. It's not, you know, we're not saying you're absolutely hypothyroid, but it's just showing us that you have some sluggishness. Now, if you do have sluggishness at the thyroid, you're going to have problems converting your fuel. And in other words, converting the things you eat, say like your cholesterol from your food, and turning that cholesterol into hormones, which is the basic, you know, cholesterol is the basic, what am I saying? It's the basic component to all hormones. Like, you need cholesterol to make hormones. So women are like, oh, my testosterone is so low and I'm low on all my hormones. I need to take hormones. Yeah, you probably could benefit from doing that. But how about we find out why you're not making hormones? Mm-hmm. Do you have really high cholesterol and you're not converting that cholesterol? So it's just sitting there, right? Clogging your arteries or whatever it's doing. So that's a big thing to look at that can affect absorption, but also affect how you produce your hormones and how effectively you do that. Mm-hmm. Then there's candida. So almost everybody has candida. It's native to our guts. It's supposed to be there, but to an infective level, to a level that's abundant to the point that it's creating everything from yeast infections to itchy bum, to a thrush in the mouth, white tongue, dirty ears, bad breath. Oh my goodness. Like, it just goes on and on, right? Candida, leaky gut. So this can also, the candida can clog up receptor sites. And so it can make it hard to absorb. Heavy metals can do the same thing. And heavy metals and candida are like BFFs. So then there's also any kind of severe gut dysbiosis can also inhibit in uptake of progesterone and production of progesterone. So yeah, there's a bunch of reasons why I needed that 800 milligrams, not because I was absorbing it. I wasn't. I was absorbing small amounts of that. Mm-hmm. And those small amounts were life-changing. Can you overdose on progesterone? That is a big argument. This doctor I just had was like, absolutely you can. But Carol Peterson, who I I trust her far more, who's patient facing, but she's also really big on the front of doing studies on PMDD and women and mega doses of progesterone. And those women had very difficult times absorbing it, and they needed starting at 400 milligrams, and they were taking breaking up that 400 or 600 milligrams every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes, they put pea-sized amounts of progesterone because their body wasn't able to uptake that entire dollop of 400 or 500, right? Or broken that, you know, 200 in the morning, 200 in the afternoon, 200 at night was still too big of doses. They needed to break all of those up into much tinier doses. And then they started to see complete relief. So that's fascinating to me. no one really has answers. I mean, I think it makes sense, hypothyroid and candida and whatnot, but it's very fascinating. And so, yeah, complete relief. And I really believe her. Let's see, should I go down that hole of too much progesterone? A lot of women can get very, very sleepy. It depends on what they do with their progesterone and what form of progesterone. If you're taking oral, you're most likely, it's got to go through, and this might be a little too much info, but it has to go through both passes at the liver. So that's phase one detox and phase two detox, where topical only goes through phase two. So in that phase one that it goes through, you're going to make metabolites out of that. You're going to break it down at the liver that first go. And one of the metabolites, the allopregnanolone, I believe, the alpha pathway that the progesterone goes down, is what creates drowsiness, creates some nausea for some women, grogginess in the morning. It can knock some women out. Like they can just completely like get sedated from it. Georgie Dinkoff was saying that progesterone was used for many years in pet surgery as the anesthesia to put them out.
Wow.
Because that's how potent it can be as a sedative. And that's why so many women love Prometrium, which is the prescribed version of oral bioidentical progesterone. Mm. Very confusing. Prometrium can sound like a pill, like synthetic, but it's not. That I love that. I mean, I haven't taken it in a while now, but I used to take it because it just helped me sleep through the night. But only oral progesterone, right? Not even sublingual, but the one that goes through the stomach and through digestion, first and second pass at the liver. So there's a lot of variables, and that can be very overwhelming for women. So I get that. And I feel like that's why we need this guidance, you know? Yeah. So let's throw this in there. I think it's important is the, you were saying about getting worse before you get better type of thing where women.
Yes.
Yeah. So women tend to blame. And I love Morley's analogy. I use it all the time. I've named a few podcasts after it and a few blogs, which is don't blame the flies for the trash. So it's really easy to blame progesterone for anxiety and my worsening of my bleeding and all these things that could potentially get worse when you start progesterone. And the issue here is that when you start progesterone in some women, it stimulates estrogen receptors, it stimulates the estrogen, and that can cause what we call in our group estrogen kickback. Yeah. And not all women go through this. In fact, like you said, you've never seen it. This can create what women think is I'm allergic to progesterone or I'm sensitive to progesterone and I can't take it. Yeah. I did terrible on progesterone. I gained weight on progesterone, and they start to blame. If you want to put her on mute, I'll probably talk for a few more minutes.
Okay. Get the right screen up.
So a lot of women do that. They think, oh, I got on progesterone. I won't touch it because I got sick right away. Or I got worse right away. It made my bleeding worse. So that's what we call estrogen kickback. And it's that estrogen that is fighting back. It's fighting for dominance. It's that lion that's like waking up and fighting to be dominant. I don't know why estrogen does that. It's not like there's an intelligence to it. I just think that that's the nature of estrogen, is to kind of hurry up and do its job. And if progesterone's not there to regulate it, it won't. It'll go crazy. So we call that an underdosing issue. So we say, if you have a reaction, raise your dose. And that can mean, like we were saying about PMDD, where you're raising your dose every 20 or 30 minutes, just like a pea-sized amount of topical cream, for example. So you raise the dose until the symptoms subside. So I had this issue with the migraine problems that I had. So I had severe, severe migraines. That was one of my big hormonal issues, was they were so debilitating. I, you know, couldn't leave the house for a few days. So at the onset of the migraine, I would take a pea-sized amount of like a 5%, a low strength cream. So 3% cream or 5% cream. We can talk about that if you want. And then we take a pea-sized amount and I would rub it behind my ears. And then Wait 20 minutes. If I still had the migraine, I would add another pea size amount to the other side behind my ear. If I still had the migraine, I would take some magnesium and then I'd add another pea size amount. So I've done this 5 or 6 or 7 times by noon, let's say. And now I'm symptom free. And now I'm at, let's say, 250 milligrams of topical cream. I stay there. I don't go up or down. I stay there until I feel another symptom. So, and if I don't feel another symptom, well, then that's my dose. I'm at 250 milligrams every day. Sometimes it's daily for some women. Sometimes it's during, day. It's a either you're doing a maintenance protocol or you're doing a therapeutic protocol. Therapeutic would be someone who's taking it daily because they're like with me. I was infertile. I was having issues, all the issues. And little bits of progesterone would make me so much worse. So I would have to do it daily and I would have to up my dose until I had no symptoms. So you can imagine after those migraines, I'm at 250 milligrams and let's say a couple of days pass, I'm getting close to ovulation and all of a sudden, I start bleeding instead of ovulating and I start to, and the, and it's coming quickly. The blood is heavy. So then I go up a dose. I go up a dose. I do it again. And now all of a sudden, my bleeding has stopped. And now I'm at 450 milligrams daily. And then carry on. I'm great at that point. I've gone 3 weeks and I'm blissed out. I've never been happier. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm ovulating, right? And I'm getting middle schmerz, right? The cramps where you can feel yourself ovulating. It was always my right ovary for some reason. And then, okay, so then I start taking progesterone again, or I have an anxiety attack, or I feel super depressed, or I'm not sleeping through the night. Whatever symptom it is, melasma in my case got darker when I started using progesterone. Okay, the melasma is darker. I started rubbing progesterone into my forehead. This was all over the course of 2 or 3 weeks when I started it. And this is a therapeutic dosing. This is for a woman who is severely riddled with all kinds of issues, having issues with absorption. This isn't your average woman, but this is a woman who is quite common now, very common that this is happening more and more. So this is why I ended up at 800 milligrams a day for a whole year. And finally got to a point where the melasma was gone, the migraines were gone. I started having a period, even though I was at 800 milligrams. I was ovulating. So that's why women are like, progesterone is going to stop you from ovulating. Yeah, it can if you are taking more than you need to oppose the estrogen. So it's this very delicate dance that we need to pay close attention to if you're going to be doing this yourself. You first figure out if you need the therapy method or you need the maintenance method. Sounds like all the women that come to you and a lot of women need just the maintenance, which is generally the doctors will tell you for days 14 through 28. That's when you, and it's probably not above 150 milligrams, even 50, as low as 50 milligrams a day. And that's a maintenance method. It's very common. And some women are like, ah, I don't bleed enough or I bleed too much, but I don't have cramps. And I say, well, then go from ovulation to day one of bleeding. That's still maintenance and still a common medical recommendation. And you might stay at that 50 milligrams or 175 milligrams for days ovulation to bleeding. Day one of blood, red blood flow, right? That's the first day one of your period is day one of red blood flow. Not spotting, not brown, not a little scanty period. It's day one of red blood flow. Two, that's when you stop, right? So ovulation to bleeding. So, if you're trying to conceive, you cannot dose progesterone before you ovulate. So you have to know when you ovulate and when the day you ovulate, I always tell women to start the next day on the progesterone because it can stop you from ovulating. So, well, that was a lot of info, I know, but
No, it was great.
oh, good, good. Because I really want women to understand why that therapeutic dosing comes into play and that it's not just my invention. This is a whole bunch of women suffering severely like I was, not getting the help they needed, created communities like the progesterone therapy website, And then now the estrogen dominance support group and Carol Peterson and all these people, even Catherine Dalton used to, Katarina Dalton, Dr. Dalton, she was doing this back in her day, you know, giving women high doses of progesterone. Ray Pete even talks about giving high doses of progesterone like this. So it is the Wild West. And that's what Dr. Rosensweet was not happy about. And I said, I think it's wonderful because we know it's safe. Yeah, we're going to have women who are afraid. They're at 600 milligrams and they're like, it's not getting better. And we're like, go up, raise your dose. You're going to be okay. You got to be doing the homework too. You can't just take progesterone and think it's a magic bullet. You got to be doing the magnesium. You got to be getting the vitamin A retinol. You have to get your bioavailable copper up, because I know that's the complex rabbit hole that we love so much, but it's very important to at least start to understand why estrogen is high.
Yeah.
And that's or dominating.
Yeah. I'm glad you said it's not a magic, you know, pill or magic cream.
Yeah.
You have to address your stuff too. So if you're a really stressed person, progesterone is only going to get you so far, right? Or if you are eating McDonald's every day, which I know my listeners aren't, that's only going to get you so far. You have to do your homework as well. But I wanted to ask you that, and I loved your response and how intricate it was, because what I don't want to be responsible for is women listening to this episode and then going out and then doing things and getting frustrated, because it is an intricate dance. We are talking about hormones. We are talking about things that can impact your mood, your fertility, how good you feel, how drowsy you feel. Right. And so I think it's important to understand what you're playing with. And I also, I don't know half as much about progesterone as you do, but from what I read, I'm not afraid of dosing. I think what I have access to, well, and with your products too, I think you can bathe in it and you'll be okay. I haven't experienced any negative, but I do respect progesterone. You know, I respect it, and I don't, you know, I kind of think of like the ocean. I respect the ocean, but I'm not afraid to go in it. I respect progesterone, but I'm not afraid to play with it. And I've had really good success specifically with women trying to conceive. Mm-hmm. I've had a client that comes to mind just recently. All we did was we changed out her self-care product. She's using a lot of self-care products that had xenoestrogens, which are just chemicals that mimic the role of estrogen in the body. So tend to make women estrogen dominant. And we just started using 3% progesterone, and she got pregnant.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, actually. So, and I'm not saying that's going to be your story if you're listening, but I'm really encouraged by that. And I'm encouraged by the work you're doing. I'm encouraged by Ray Pete. And if I understand this right, he has the patent that makes your products possible.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So I still don't fully understand it, because I'm trying to get him on my show, but it's very difficult. As you know, he's quite old, and even though he's always on shows, but I just want him to know that it's because of that patent. My partner at Ona's, which was Ona's husband, and I like to call him the mad chemist. He said, if it wasn't for him, we couldn't freely make large strengths. So again, I keep on bringing up Dr. Rosensweet, who was like, we can't not have compounding pharmacies. It's so important, because otherwise, you know, you're just looking at one strength. And I'm like, that's not entirely true, sir. You know, Ona's makes 3%, 5%, 10%, 20%, and different mediums. So we make an oral oil we make an oil that can be dosed orally. It can be used topically. It can be used vaginally. All of our products are clean. They can all be used vaginally or rectally. Not all the creams can't be taken orally, even though it wouldn't hurt you, but it would be gross. But all of them are safe enough to dose to use in any form. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've even used, I don't know if you've ever read the book Adrenaline Dominance by Michael Platt, Dr. Platt. But he talks about using 3% and 5% on children with autism. So I've used 5% and 3% on children with autism, children with in the spectrum, children with night terrors, bedwetting. I've used it on dogs with incontinence. I've used it on I've had a girlfriend who used it on her broody chickens and had great success. I mean, it's incredible. And I forgot that the xenoestrogen, that was one of the top reasons that Carol Peterson thinks that women are having issues with absorption. It's because these xenoestrogens can occupy not just the estrogen receptor, but even possibly the progesterone receptor. So talk about a chameleon. It's scary in that way. And so I have this theory, because I've been doing this for so long now, that it's like 100% of the time now, when women do use progesterone and have rashes, especially on their chest and their neck, sometimes it gets so bad that it turns into like lizard skin. And I mean, one of my girlfriends was my client who had it, and you could touch her skin and it felt like the skin of a lizard. Thank God she trusted me and she was brave. She was like, as long as it doesn't move onto my face, I think I can tolerate this. She wanted to quit. And I said, I just have this feeling you're detoxing sunblock and foundation and concealer and makeup out of your body, xenoestrogen. So you're detoxing it. Sure enough, she kept through it. She didn't apply it to her chest anymore. She started to move to the back of her neck and to the bottoms of her feet, because we like to favor thin skin areas, even though there's no research that says that it collects in the fat, even though you'll hear doctors say it over and over and over. There's no research. Carol Peterson said, show me the assay. Show me the test that showed that there was actually progesterone lodged or caught up in fat cells. And it's not a thing. But just because so much conflicting info out there, I say let's favor thin skinned areas anyway. So neck, under face, forearms, back of the neck, ears, inside the ears, rectum, interlabially, bottoms of the feet. Those are my favorite places to apply. And so sure enough, her skin completely healed. She's still using progesterone to this day. And since which was way back when I started helping women with it, I have had so many women get the rashes, not to that degree. And I'm like, if you can tolerate it, if it's not bleeding or burning and it's not accompanied by fever or nausea, if you can tolerate it, I think you should go up in dose and find another place to apply it. Every time it heals up and it passes. So I'm convinced there's a xenoestrogen culprit here with a lot of the absorption issues.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. I didn't even think about the fact that, you just didn't even think about the receptors and how xenoestrogens could potentially interfere with a progesterone receptor.
Yeah.
That thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know how that would work, but it definitely, they're so creepy, those xenos. Also, Carol said that some women just have less receptors. And I talked to Georgi Dinkoff, and he thinks that is someone who has been running on cortisol, like myself, from babyhood, right? From an infant level, where your stress levels are keeping you in fight or flight your whole life. That, let's go back to that catabolizing concept, maybe it's destroying progesterone receptors. And so you just don't have enough, or it's shutting them down. I don't know. And he was referencing that. He said, you know, I think, yeah, some people do have, even men have less progesterone receptors. And this is probably a cortisol, a function of cortisol, and probably you can't grow them back or you can't turn them on. I don't know. But, so that would also play into, I think that, like I said, the landscape of the progesterone research has got a long way to go. And we're going to find out some pretty amazing and shocking things at some point where it's like, oh, wow, cortisol seems to really be running the show for a lot of women. And when you run that cortisol, that when you're running off cortisol and an epinephrine, norepinephrine, adrenaline, you know, you're flipping on. Morley said this to me. That's who was on my show yesterday. Morley, Dr. Rosensweet was the day before. I had Morley back for the sixth time. And he's so great. And he said, it's the fat switch. Because you're running on cortisol, and it's fine for many women, many people. It's fine for a long time until it isn't. And then you start to affect, you know, your energy production and metabolism and everything. And then that fat switch gets flipped on and insulin resistance happens. And now you've got cortisol belly. And you've got these women who are heading into menopause like myself, where I'm like, okay, why is that not going anywhere? That belly, that apron of fat, we call it. And that's what it is. It's because this cortisol adrenaline monkey, right?
Goodness, I have so many questions and thoughts just about that alone.
I know. Me too. Me too.
So, well, okay. I want to be respectful of your time. Thank you so much for coming on here and sharing your knowledge on progesterone. I know a lot of people are going to listen to this and be like, holy cow. Like, I didn't even know this world existed. I didn't even know to be paying attention to progesterone. I love that you call progesterone a chameleon. I think the last time we talked, you said, you know, it's more akin to, actually, I think I wrote it down. You said progesterone is more akin to, something that it is to something else. And it just blew my mind. Ooh. And now I can't think of it.
I should write it down when you find it.
Let me see. I did write it down.
And my time is fine. I'm okay. I have a good, yeah. So don't worry about my time. It's just entirely up to how long you want your show to be.
You said it's more akin to pregnenolone than DHEA is.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, in fact, okay. So, I got really frustrated with, in my group, we have 22,000 members now, maybe a little more. And it breaks my heart when women are like, I'm allergic. I tried it. It almost killed me. I ended up in ER. They have these stories where I'm like, wait a minute, why? Why'd you end up in ER? I had an anxiety attack. And I'm like, that is not progesterone. That is, progesterone is an anxiolytic. I think I said that right. Right. It literally helps calm anxiety. Yeah. It comes in for that reason. That's one of its superpowers. Like I said, they use it as sedation. Right. So if you're having anxiety, this is revealing, shedding some light on something else, right? And it's most likely that you're having an adrenaline response, which has more to do with your estrogen load and your hypothyroid. And, you know, we can peel that onion back all the way down to high iron, high estrogen, low mag, low bioavailable copper, et cetera. But it breaks my heart. And of course I wouldn't want them to continue if that's that they're going to end up in ER, but I would have said to that woman in the beginning, when she said, I'm having anxiety attacks, I would say, go up in dose, do micro doses. Make sure you're getting enough carbohydrate, healthy carbohydrate, make sure you're, you know, and we would talk about that. But a lot of women are like, nope, I'm unique to this. And there are women who are unique to it, but I'm unique. I can't do it. And I get so sad and heartbroken because I know they need it. I know they need it. So I did some research and talked to Georgie Dinkoff and talked to my partner. And I said, I think we need to carry pregnenolone because pregnenolone is higher up, more safe, weaker, even though it's the mother of all hormones and donates to everything. It's gentler. I shouldn't say weak. It's just gentler. It's like a mom that has five kids. You know, she dilutes all of what she has to give out to all the children, but she's powerful nonetheless. She's important and the rock. The cornerstone, right? That's pregnenolone, but it favors the progesterone pathway. It favors making progesterone rather than, so when you, at least it does topically when you take it, when it's just in its, when your body's producing it, it's going to favor whatever is going on in your body. You know, if you if you are a type personality, if you have, you're going to favor DHEA and you're going to make androgens, you're going to make more testosterone. If you're, you know, more the opposite of that, it's going to favor progesterone and estrogen and cortisol, right? So I said we should carry it because it's weaker. Worst case scenario in someone, it doesn't do much. But best case scenario is these women who really think that they can't tolerate progesterone, they'll have a better experience with it. And it'll help them to make progesterone naturally. It'll favor that pathway. So we developed a product, a 10% pregnenolone called Luna Madre, which is, you know, mother is madre or madre. And Luna is our logo, is the moon. And that has an Ona reference, but also our moon cycles, right? Even though men use progesterone and make progesterone, that's why I came up with that logo. So the pregnenolone, it is more akin to progesterone than it is to DHEA. Yeah, definitely.
Well, and you just demonstrated to me exactly why I wanted you on the show, because a lot of people can talk about hormones, and hormones are a really sexy topic, right? There, a lot of people want to talk, but I wanted to interview somebody who understood that it takes enzymes to make hormones and it takes minerals to make enzymes. And you get that. You understand that. So you do peel that onion back and you go, well, what is your mag? Because you need mag to make energy, right?
Yeah.
And that you understand kind of mineral dysregulation and the role that that can play in somebody. So you're not just recommending a bioidentical hormone to people. You're saying, get your act together, like really look at this bigger picture, because the foundation of hormones is just as important. So anyways, I just wanted to put that out there.
I'm so glad you did, because, you know, women say to me, why not get to the root cause? And I'm like, amen. Yes. And when you figure that out, you let me know. Because yes, I do know, you know, we do need, I always say A, B, C, D, E plus magnesium. You know, some people aren't in the D camp, but you still have to get D. You still have to either consume it through cod liver oil, or you got to do it some way. So A, B, C, D, E, and magnesium. And then, you know, upregulate digestion, support thyroid function, support your liver. But someone like myself, and a lot of women who have Lyme disease, who have, you know, various infections, who've had a lot of trauma in their life, who have PTSD, women who just have extremely stressful lives, women who can't manage their stress. These women can do all the things.
I can
upregulate my gut as I have for 17 years. I have done so much gut work that it's almost nauseating. And do the root cause protocol and try to, you know, dump iron and take all my adrenal cocktails and do all the things. And I still have this, it's almost like it's just, I'm not saying it's not fixable, but there are just some women that are going to be on progesterone for the rest of their lives. There's some women who are going to need to take Epsom salts for the rest of their lives. They're going to need magnesium. They're going to need, you know, a chill pill at the end of the day. I'm telling you, like, I'm not opposed to antidepressants. I'm not opposed. These things are there for a reason. And progesterone is even a crutch in some cases. But if my leg isn't healing, thank God for that crutch, right? If I broke my leg and I need a crutch, thank God for the crutch. I don't need it. I need to get to the root cause of why my leg is broken. Okay, try it. Good luck with that. In the meantime, I've got my crutch and I'm going to use my crutch.
Do you know that I say that often, that that's a limitation of functional medicine, this root cause?
No. Because
I say this all the time and I feel like you should know that. Because well, for a couple of reasons. One, I think that like migraines, you talked about migraines a few times. I think they're the result of a perfect storm. I don't think there is one root cause to migraines. I think you've got a lot of things happening all at the same time to cause a migraine. And so I think sometimes functional medicine, a limitation of that is they get focused on the one thing. Like, we need to find the one thing, and then you have blinders on to everything else that's important.
Yes.
Another thing that I don't like about the root cause is sometimes it doesn't matter. sometimes it doesn't matter what caused something if you can figure out how to solve it. Yes, and I'll say the opposite of that is true also. It's a lot easier to solve a problem when you know what caused it in the first place. But mm-hmm. I would also say that there are situations where, you know, in my approach, like because I use things like magnesium in my practice, I'm treating every cell and tissue in the body. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it doesn't matter what caused that dysfunction. If we're restoring function everywhere, we're going to clear that up anyways.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that you're, because that's not a popular opinion.
No. I mean, people fall off their chairs when I'm like, hey, take an Advil, honey. Like, don't suffer, you know? It's just like I guess it really depends on what you want. You know, if you want, you just want your symptoms to go away, that can be dangerous because there's a lot of ways to make symptoms mm-hmm. go away and sure. create other problems. So, you know, really, I just want to thrive. I want to know that I'm doing the right thing. You know, you're going to really appreciate this to bring this into the mix really quickly is I had this, this crazy revelation the other day. It was kind of a dream. I was in my sleep. I was about to wake up in the morning and, I had this like message from God and it was like, you know, I guess I was at church the previous day and they were saying, we all worship something. We all worship something. We break it. And we're designed. We're just human beings do that. We just look mm-hmm. for things. We obsess on them. We worship them. It can be alcohol. It can be sex. It can be relationships, different going from relationship to relationship. It can be really healthy things too, like God. And I was like, yeah, I can't think of what I worship. I can't think of it. I don't know what it is. I think I'm pretty stable these days. And right before I woke up, I got this message like, actually, you're worshiping health. You're worshiping trying to figure out your body and other people's bodies. And though that is absolutely a noble thing to set your sight on, you're worshiping it. And that's not good because you're forgetting it's like you're worshiping the creation, not the creator. You're forgetting why you have these gifts. You have the ability to help people and to help yourself. You're forgetting why you have access to all this knowledge and why you have this photographic memory with nothing but progesterone, nothing else. I can't even remember anything from 2 days ago, but progesterone, I'm like, what is that? What is that? It's a gift and you're worshiping the creation, not the creator. And so I bring that up because it's like, even at the core of healing, you know, yeah, the root cause protocol, yeah, the onion, but if you keep peeling that onion, you know, God's waiting for you at the bottom of that onion. it's like, you're going to break it down. We are not in control totally. And so we have to relinquish control sometimes. And I say this to myself, like I get a little bit too obsessed with the what, the why did this happen? Why do I have eczema when my gut is great? What's happening? Why? And I get super obsessed. Oh, it's the ATP and the transport chain of the, you know, and I talk to Morley and I go down that rabbit hole and I'm like, okay, it's my whatever, my transport chain. And then I'm like, okay, how about relax, take some hydrocortisone so the itching will stop and take a nap and come back to it later, you know? So yeah, I just went off there for a minute, but I thought I love it was relevant.
That. Thank you for sharing that. No, I think that's beautiful to have those revelations and those thoughts of, you know, I'm not really in control anyways. I'm just here for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not being complacent in that ride either. Right. Still.
Right.
There's a balance. There's definitely a balance. And I struggle with that too. I have moments where I'm like, I got to put the book down. And even right before giving birth, I would say like a month or so before, I was like, I'm too in my own head. I need to be. So I started doing more like arts and crafts and I started reading less research just so I could be in that right brain. Cause I knew that's where I needed to be to give birth. And that was such a gift to kind of step away and take a breath for a little bit. Yeah. And I in that time, I think I have Jim Stevenson Jr. on the show a few times and this was in a period where he was doing a lot of research and getting excited and sending me articles. And I just had to put them in a folder. And Morley too. Morley will send me articles. And I just put them in a folder for a minute and go, okay, I'll come back to the, my thought yeah. was, I'll come back to this when she's here. Isn't that funny?
I'm so impressed that you're here with me right now. I'm so impressed. I was like, oh, I think she's probably had her baby by now, and I'm probably not going to hear from her for a while. And here we are. So I just, you're really juggling well. So
I wanted this to happen so badly because I think your message is so important and so encouraging. Oh, and I want to end on this because this is really funny. So shout out to my mom. My mom is a fan of your podcast. My mom listens to a bunch of health and wellness podcasts, and I can't keep up with everybody she listens to. But she subscribed to your podcast, and she just had the next episode playing, and she goes, oh my God, Steph, I was listening to her podcast and then I recognized your voice. I didn't tell her that I was on your podcast. It slipped my mind. I don't know.
That's so anyways, funny.
She's like, I know that voice. That's me. That's my kid.
Awesome. What are the odds? That story. And I love that she listens. That's so cool.
Oh yeah. She finds the best people. I'm not sitting there. I try not to impose my own stuff on my family members. Uh-huh. So I don't say like, mom, you got to listen to the, I don't.
Yeah.
And so she found that on her own, and she's like, yeah, I'm subscribed, and you just popped right in. She's like, I didn't even pay attention to the title or anything. I just had the next one in the queue, the episode aired, and I listened.
That's really funny. I love those stories. I love them because they come from like all over, you know. I'll get some Australian people that are like, you know, I was listening to you and I didn't even know, you know, it was you. And now I'm like obsessed. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is the woman who runs my estrogen dominance group, you know, and they're like in Australia, you know. Awesome. I love that. It's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Your message is getting out there. So that's
I'm awesome. So glad. Well, it's going to get, you know, it's going to get harder. The road's going to get narrower, and the FDA is going to tighten their screws. And I'm really praying that it's not going to have an effect on over the counter. It's already having an effect on like PayPal and Amazon and people who sell. So, you know, let's just hope that it doesn't come down to them taking away our ability to manufacture it, because I think it would be a sad day. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, I will link your estrogen dominant support group, your Instagram, your podcast, anything else you would like me to link. I'll make your website, Ona's website.
Ona's, yeah.
There. Okay. Yeah. And thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're a busy gal, and I'm just so glad we got to make this happen. I have so much respect for you and your work. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. It means so much coming from you. It really does. Thank you.
Wasn't that awesome? It was engaging to me. I was like, wow, she really managed to harness my, you know, what I have to say about hormone health and bioidentical progesterone. So I think that's gonna be evergreen for sure. So please check all of her info out. As you can see, she's a great interviewer, and she is well-spoken and just really clear, and I just enjoy her show. So check it out. It's in the show notes, and her info about getting hold of her and hiring her and her groups, her courses that she does with women. It's all good stuff. So check it out. And I wanted to just remind everyone, if you are new here, please go to us.onasnatural.com. and get your progesterone guide book. You sign up for the newsletter, and you're going to get some guidance there. And this newsletter that we are sending out is really cool. What we're doing is we're marrying Healthy Gut Girl gut health info with Ona's and hormone health. It's not just for women. It's for women of all ages, young girls, and it's also for men. So it leans towards female, but definitely there's a lot of info that can be useful for men. So if you have husbands or spouses or brothers or sons that have hormone issues or low testosterone or anything like that, all this info is good for them. And yeah, these newsletters are going to be incredible. They're going to keep you abreast of what's happening with Healthy Gut Girl, because I will be transitioning our estrogen dominance group off of Facebook. I'm not getting rid of the estrogen dominance group at all. It will be there as long as they allow us to be there, but I'm done with the censorship. I'm done with the shadow banning. I'm done with all of it. It's a very disorganized platform. It's not private as they say it is. And so I want to switch, and we are creating a Mighty Network. So Healthy Gut Girls Mighty Network is coming very soon, probably by the end of March. So keep in touch, right? Definitely sign up for the newsletter on us.onasnatural.com and on healthygutgirl.com. And all of that, if you're a member of my Total Gut Makeover, if you're a member of the Liver Support Program, if you're a member of the Fermentation Course, any of that stuff, you're going to be able to come right into the Mighty Network and access all that info in a very different and updated way. It's going to be so fun. It already is so fun. And the person that's helping me do all this, he's incredible. He's so good and really just bringing Healthy Gut Girl to the next level, as well as Ona's. So I'm excited, and I want you to be part of it. If you need to get some progesterone, go on to us.onasnatural.com. You can use the coupon code ONAS, O-N-A-S, and get 15% off your order, along with multi-product discounts, right? If you buy more, two or more of the same product, you'll get even more of a discount. We call it stacking discounts, baby. All right, friends. So talk to you soon.